Doctor Who podcast by a fan and her dad.
No, it's a fan and his daughter.
Series 7, Episode 11, The Crimson Horror.
That was amazing!
What were some of the things that were amazing?
Let's see. Had the Patternost Gang, had Clara, it had kids blackmailing Clara. That was amazing! It had mystery and tension and a bit of grossness as well. But, you know, that's Mr. all part Sweet. Of it.
I saw eyes being covered up at a certain point. I remembered the appearance of Mr. Sweet being a bit grosser, maybe because I was expecting it. I didn't find it so gross this time.
I'd seen in my book there's a brief bit about Mrs. Gillyflower and Mr. Sweets, which I think actually made it, like, better for me, because the moment we're introduced, she says, "I'm Mrs. Gillyflower," at the very beginning, I'm like, because I just seen this picture of her with the red thing. And, like, I'm not even sure I actually read the description of her, but I just knew that she was in the monsters section.
You have a huge smile on your face and wide eyes. I wish people could see that.
I don't have wide eyes.
Well, beaming eyes. Mrs. Gillyflower was actually played by a famous English actor, Diana Rigg, who I remember seeing in repeats of a show called The Avengers, where she played a role not unlike the one that Jenny briefly took up when all of a sudden she took off her dress and became a fighting machine. That was pretty cool.
So cool. I liked the bit at the end where they were, like, in the place and Strax was allowed to use the gun and he's, like, firing at everything. Yay! And then what was it they said? Like, have you been eating those sherbet lollies again? That was great.
His version of a sugar high.
Shooting everything in sight. Fun!
I thought there were some interesting things in that episode, and one of them was the way it began with what I thought was a really effective cliffhanger in the cold open when you see the doctor's reflection and you wonder why he's there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's a very common device where you actually join the story later than the doctor. So the doctor and Clara have been having an adventure.
Yes.
And we jump in later through a third party. But I thought that worked pretty effectively. Yeah,
especially because the third party was the Paternoster game.
Oh, the Paternoster. I've got, I was keeping notes and I've got Manifestra! Exclamation point. Jenny! Exclamation point. And then my next note, a couple of scenes later, Strax! Exclamation point. They are so good, aren't they? So well written and so well acted. I know it's Dan Starkey, who I've actually heard interviewed, he goes to conventions and things, who plays Strax, and Madame Vastra, whose name I didn't know, I had to look that up, Niamh McIntosh, they do such a good job. It must be so hard to act under all of that makeup with a, like, to actually convey emotions and things. But Strax is just genuinely funny. Yeah. And Madame Vastra is so commanding. And
I love how they use, like, their alienness as a weapon. Like, sometimes she'll take off a thing. Right. Oh, I love that guy who kept fainting. And it's like, okay, so he sees Lizard, so he faints. Then he sees the Potato Man, so he faints. Then he sees the TARDIS dematerializing, so he faints.
I think that's a bit of a play on the conventions of the era as well. That but it's usually it's a woman who's doing the fainting. So that was, and does he do it? Oh, he knows a little bit. He does a few other things, but almost most of what he does is a faint.
Yeah.
I wonder with the veil which Madame Vastra wears, because you can see through that.
Yeah.
But is it just not clear enough and people just think, oh, she's just got bad skin condition or something?
It's probably like, I don't know, no one bothers to look beyond the veil.
All right.
Like that psychology experiment thing with the gorilla that runs across.
Ah, okay.
Like people just don't bother to notice.
Right.
Like they're talking to the veil, not what's behind it.
Mm, I like that. That's not even hand waving. That's a psychological explanation. I like that.
I came up with that during this actual thing.
Ah, very good.
I'm just looking at your notes there. There's a lot of exclamation points.
Yes. Well, the other thing was they mentioned off about the gobby Australian. Do you know what gobby means? So it's a like, I think we have to say English now. We're doing this after Britain seems to have fallen apart. But an expression for, like, mouthy or someone who talks a lot. And that's actually a reference to Fifth Doctor companion Tegan, who was Australian, and trying to get her back to Heathrow. And the very next line, so Tegan, who gets a bit of a bad rap, I just like to mention, and the very next line where he says, "Braveheart, Clara." And Braveheart was one of the Fifth Doctor's trademark lines.
I liked
it. So that was really nice.
I liked that bit at the end where he said, like, "You're the boss." And Clara's like, "Am I?" And then she goes home and she's, or not possibly to her house, but to someone else's house. And there's the toy and she's like, "I'm the boss." And then she is the laptop. I like the way they eventually get her to say is by putting up something that isn't accurate. She's like, "That's not right."
Yes, although that wasn't deliberate on their part, because why is there the photo of her from Victorian London?
That was the other one.
One of her fragments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the Ice Lady or the Snowman?
The Snowman, yeah. So, and that's really interesting too, because I'd forgotten where this fell when we started watching it. And when Jenny said, "But Clara's dead," I thought, "Oh, that's right. I forgot that was a whole, a whole thing that was going on." And even though they kept on asking, "But Clara's dead, what's going on?" Clara was never there for that conversation.
Yeah.
So it wasn't directly addressed. But I think that's the first time that she's seen some evidence of something going on. Although I don't know if it should be as surprising as that, because what would you assume if you saw that photo? If you were the companion of the Doctor and you saw a photo of yourself from some time that you hadn't visited, what would your assumption be?
But we visited in the future.
Yeah. So she didn't click to that. And I wonder if that's, I can't remember now. I don't think it comes up in the next episode. I also like when they go back to that era. I like the familiarity with the characters. It's not like the unit era, but a bit of familiarity. Mm. And also they get to play with a lot of the Sherlock Holmes type conventions. That's really nice.
I think it's cool with the Patmaster gang because, like, we've seen them before, so there's no time spent trying to make us like them or anything. It's just, like, straight into action.
Yeah,
and I found at the start, like, Jenny was sneaking around somewhere and there was the red door that someone else had gone through and died. I'm sitting there going, like, "Don't go through it, don't go through it, don't go through it."
You're already emotionally invested.
Yeah.
That's really true. That also helps with Strax. Everything he says is 10 times funnier.
Yeah.
Even though they're great lines that he has, but it's all that much funnier. And I thought it was actually quite effective use of Vastra too, where she actually had some information from 65 million years ago.
Yes.
Which helped solve it. In fact, it was really good. They all had really important, valuable roles in getting to the conclusion. This was by Mark Gatiss, who also did, I'm not sure which ones of his you've seen. He did Sleep No More, which you saw in the last series, and Robots of Sherwood, which you saw from the one before. Cold War.
I've seen that one. That was good.
The Lazarus Experiment, I don't think you have seen. And The Idiot's Lantern with the televisions and the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Unquiet Dead, which is maybe his best, which you haven't seen. But I've forgotten. This is really good, I think.
Feeling we watched something else by him not very long ago and we had this same conversation.
Oh, really?
Where you were listing ones that he's seen.
So,
because I just remember you saying, "The Idiot's Lantern, have you seen that one?"
Well, while we're on the issue of repeating ourselves, how would you compare this to The Beast Below? She's really thinking hard. I have to commentate so people can, they don't get your expressions here.
They're lost. We could just cut this out.
But I think the fact that you're thinking about it, so I think that's important.
I think you should be quiet.
Okay.
I think it was maybe better.
Better than The Beast Below. Wow. Okay. That puts it, there are a couple that you've now found but you like more, not including the 50th anniversary special, Day of the Doctor, because we put that in a separate category, or you put that in a separate category. When you were doing those mental calculations, what might have been some of the things that made you?
Even though it was set on Earth, there was still quite a bit of world building for me because, like, I don't really know much about this period. Mm. So that was good. It was, like, just as fun.
And that's something you really like. You really like that mixture and having humour in there.
There was tension as well. And it's got the Paternoster game.
Yeah, it's a big help, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like having the Brigadier.
It's like
you're off to a good start.
They were sort of equal. But then there's the Paternoster gang, so, you know.
If only the Paternoster gang had been on the spaceship. They would do well on a spaceship.
Yeah, maybe.